Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to another information-packed edition of Global Leader Radio. Today, I take great pride and pleasure in introducing this week's energetic and effervescent guest. So Demi Hicks is on board with us today. She's the president of DBH Consulting and with a great big smile on her face. She's a strategic consultant, an executive coach, a facilitator, and a speaker. Her role is really to help CEOs plan and facilitate the transition that emerging leaders face as they navigate the complexities and joys of moving into the C-suite. So Demi, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to visit with us and share your stories and, of course, your wisdom and your insights. So how are you today?
I am great. Alvin, I'm terrific. Happy to be here with you. Just privileged that you would give me the opportunity to come here, be a part of your program.
Well, I promise you, the pleasure and the privilege is all mine. So let's begin by having you tell us a little bit more about the lady behind that velvety voice our listeners hear now. So then we'll transition into what you do. Then I'd love to have you talk a little bit about for whom you do what you do, and then why you've chosen this segment to work with. So can you help us become a little bit more familiar with your personal background, beginning with perhaps where you were raised originally?
Sure. I was, first let me tell you, I was born in St. Augustine, Florida.
Oh, my goodness.
And you didn't ask me that question, but I want to tell you that because I think St. Augustine is just a mystical place and that there are not enough people that really know that not only is St. Augustine the oldest city in the United States, but it is just an incredible place to be. And when I use the word mystical, it's because I mean it. So it has meaning to me that I was born in St. Augustine, Florida. I was raised in Jacksonville, two brothers and a sister, two loving, wonderful parents, and left Florida in 1979 to venture out as a young rookie in my career and have spent time not only in Florida, but in New York, in California, in Baltimore, becoming a student of business and understanding what it is that makes a business owner, and being intrigued by that question.
Wow, that's impressive. And you're right. St. Augustine is a mystical place. It's, of course, another place that I'd love to be able to get to and play a little bit more golf. But that's a different story. A different show, perhaps, even, right?
That's right. That is a different story. And if you go out to play golf, take me with you.
Okay, good stuff. Well, tell us a little bit about your professional background. How do we get to where we are today with DBH Consulting?
That's a fascinating question, I think, and I hope maybe your listeners will think so too. When I got out of school, I had someone call me, and I was looking for a job. Mm-hmm. I didn't know really what I wanted to do. Oftentimes, people come out of school, and they know exactly what they want to do. Mm-hmm. I want to be an attorney. I want to be a doctor. I want to be an entrepreneur. I really wasn't there. I knew that I was good at building relationships, but I didn't really know what business I wanted to get into. So I had one of my mentors call me and say, "Do you know anything about the insurance business?" And I said, "The only thing I know about the insurance business is that now that I'm out of school, my dad says that I have to pay for my own auto insurance." So I said, "No, but do you have a job?" I actually took a job, Alvin, working for a company called AMS. They actually offer technology to the insurance industry. AMS, some 25 years later, is still in business, still serving the insurance industry. Today they're called Vertafore Systems. But in starting in that business, my job was to go into independent agents and brokers office and to understand what they do. I was fascinated by those businesses. I was fascinated by the business owner. I was fascinated by their involvement in the community, by their commitment to their employees. And my job was to sit down every day and figure out how does paper flow so that I could translate how paper flows back to our programmers so that they could create technology. I mean, today this is so, what is she talking about?
Yeah.
But back more than 20 years ago, that's what it was all about. It was documenting workflow so that they could program so that technology could replace paper.
Interesting.
I got into the insurance industry that way. Very early on in my career, within the first 2 years, again, still very young, I had a leader of one of the agency organizations that I was a part of. I was in there documenting those workflows. He came up to me and he tapped me on the shoulder and he said he wanted to talk to me. And he said, "Demi, don't stay with technology. Expand. Become a student of the business." I was young. I was naive. I was smart in that I said, this man is successful. He's known all over the country. I'm going to listen to what he says. So I built my career path within the insurance industry to become a student of the industry. At that time, the industry of insurance. I made major career steps. Oftentimes, I think I was lucky. Oftentimes, I think I created opportunities for myself. Who knows whether it's luck or creating opportunities or both, to fall into the right place at the right time to meet the kind of leaders, leaders of big corporations, leaders of medium-sized companies. And they always had an interest in me, the emerging leader. They saw something in me that they believed was could be beneficial to others. And so they gave me an opportunity to come into their organization and to learn. I became a student of the insurance industry, focused a lot of attention on how I could help that industry not necessarily grow its leaders at that time, but actually grow and develop their businesses. And then I decided that my entrepreneurial fire, if you will, which has always been there and always flaming and still flames today, was saying, "Demi, take a risk. Take a risk outside of this comfort zone that you're in and do something different." I got another telephone call. I was offered the opportunity to join a healthcare cost containment company. Now, Alvin, this was in 1992 when the Clintons had just entered the White House. And so everything, just like it is has been over the course of the past couple of years, everything was about healthcare. I joined as both an investor with every penny that I had and a part of the senior executive team. They wanted me because of my insurance connections.
Interesting.
A healthcare cost containment startup. We had data that would suggest to people when hospitals were overcharging for services and goods. I was part of the C-suite. I built a sales team. I didn't know anything about selling, but they said, "Demi, you can sell." And I said, "Okay, if you tell me I can sell, I guess I'll sell." So we went out and hired four rookies that had the right attitude and that were smart and that wanted to be a part of this enthusiasm that we had built. And in less than 3 years, we built that company from $150,000 in revenue and seven employees when I started to more than $6.5 million in revenue. Less than 3 years. And then I went out because the senior team decided we're ready to sell. Let's be opportunistic.
Okay.
Let's not take a chance that this trend north is going to be a trend south.
Right.
I went out to Equifax Services and said, "We're on the market. Do you want to buy us?" We sold that organization, MRS, to Equifax Services, and I was not of the culture of Equifax Services. I probably could have gone to work there, but I chose not to go to work there, and DBH Consulting was born.
Was born then.
Right.
That's impressive. So with regard to DBH Consulting, your tact today is that you help CEOs plan and facilitate the transition that emerging leaders face as they navigate the complexities and joys moving into the C-suite. So tell us a little bit about what that means and really what you do beneath the covers when you go in and talk to clients.
There's a lot written and there's a lot of theory and there's a lot of practice, a lot of good theory and a lot of good practice in the area of leadership development. Mm-hmm. There are many, many strong leadership development organizations and practitioners all over the world, across this country. You probably know a lot of them, Alvin.
Yeah.
The area that I became interested in was more narrow than that of leadership development and what is it we have to do to develop our leaders in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what I observed, and that's a key word, what I observed, because of what I observed in the organizations that I had the opportunity to work with or be a part of in some way, was that leadership transitions are taken for granted. So you have I look at it three ways. You have emerging leaders, and emerging leaders are those people, those individuals, men and women, who are viewed as high potentials. They've got confidence, they're contributing to the organization, and the organization is smart enough to say, hey, we want to do something or some things to make sure that these people are tended to, that these people are developed. So that's emerging leaders.
Okay.
Of those emerging leaders, they're going to continue to climb. Some won't. Some will. Some of them will make it to the C-suite. Then you've got the other category that I call transitions, transitioning leaders. And in transitioning leaders, there are two areas that I think of. One is that leader who is a part of an organization today, and they're in a role of authority and responsibility. They have a lot of confidence in their competence, and they make a decision to go to another organization, to join another culture, to join another organization, and probably to join that organization at a high level, possibly in the C-suite, possibly as the CEO.
Okay.
That's a transitioning leader. The other form of transitioning leader that I view is within the organization. So here I am, that emerging leader. Maybe I've been here 25 years. Maybe I've been here 10. Doesn't matter, but I'm in the organization, and I continue to contribute. I take on leadership responsibilities. I grow.
You're
I develop.
Invested.
I'm invested. The company has invested in me. In what it is that I do for that organization. And all of a sudden, might be 10 years out if the organization is smart, might be 2 years or 1 year out if the organization is on the creative edge. And they come and they tap me and they formally say, we think you're the next CEO. So takeaway for our audience here is the longer that pathway can be, the better.
Interesting.
Sometimes, organizationally, it just can't be.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, the organization is just moving so fast and doing so many good things, they just don't understand the importance of the dialogue and the conversation of saying, you're our next in line CEO. We're going to develop a plan and a path to ensure that your transition is successful. That's how I view emerging leaders and transitioning leaders. That's the work that I do.
So that's interesting. So you mentioned an earlier trend that you wanted to take advantage of. So the problem you thought DBH could help to solve is mitigating the issues that come along with the transition?
Yes. A couple of things.
Okay.
One is that I help CEOs talk about it.
Bring it to the surface. Have a conversation.
Right. They know it's there. They know it's down here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, if an organization is growing,
mm-hmm.
which hopefully your organization is. If it's not, you ought to call me. But if it is, most organizations that I work with mm-hmm. are growing. They're vital. They're exciting. And they're not thinking that, hey, wait, I need to step back. We need to step back as a leadership team, as a CEO and a leadership team, and to have the crucial conversations that come along with what is this transition going to look like functionally? Because in the case of a transitioning leader, guess what? The sitting CEO, what's his or her role going to be? If you don't think they're wondering that, even though they're not bringing it to the surface and talking about it, I guarantee you they're wondering about it. And it's both functional and it's emotional. It's highly emotional. So I create safety and trust to bring it to the surface. And that's true for the CEO. It's true for anybody who is in the C-suite. If you're the CEO mm-hmm. and I'm the COO mm-hmm. and this person sitting over here to my right, they may not – it's going to be the next in line CEO. They may or may not be in the C-suite right now.
Okay.
So I'm getting ready to bring them into the C-suite. I'm changing the whole system around.
Right.
Do we just think we're going to be able to work together?
Yeah.
Alvin, you and I have such magic. We work so well together. And now you're bringing this person in?
Yeah.
How is that going to change things? Those things need to be – there needs to be a space that is safe enough for those conversations, those feelings – and those functional areas to take place.
That has got to be one very interesting thought pattern for an organization to even think, okay, we need to bring somebody in that can help us with this transition. How do they get to that space? How do they get to that point? Because in what all you're suggesting, bringing on DBH Consulting, there has to be some element of strategy involved. So somebody's thinking through this. Is it who normally brings you in? Is it the top management team? Is it the CEO? Is it shareholders? What normally? How does this normally happen?
Always the CEO that brings me in.
Okay.
That hasn't always been true.
Okay.
As I have grown and as I have developed in my own career and my own practice, mm-hmm. I have moved into the space where I only work with CEOs in strategy.
Okay.
And I have been working in that space for the last 5 or 6 years. So I work with CEOs. That's not to say that other people within the organization aren't looking at it, staring at it, and know that it's an issue. When I'm able to work with a CEO on strategy, it's going to come up if it's there to come up.
Gotcha.
Oftentimes, and DBH has, we work with organizations individually.
Mm-hmm.
So I work with XYZ company and I work with their executive committee.
Mm-hmm.
And always with my clients, because it's what I do, always I'm working with that CEO and that executive committee to prepare those future leaders for who is going to get the call. I'm swaying on you here, but I think it's important to make note.
Certainly.
Oftentimes, what I see is that there's not just one person who could be the next in line CEO. Oftentimes, there are several candidates, 2, maybe even 3. That is a whole nother issue of complexities.
Mm-hmm.
And how are they being developed? How are they all having the same opportunities to be developed, to be at the strategic level and executing within the organization? How does the board, I work with boards and CEOs, how do they know who is the next in line? Have they determined what the characteristics and competencies are of the leader that's going to take them to the future? That's where they start. And so then it's navigating the two or the three potential people who might step into that place. And, Alvin, the last thing I'll say is, when you get the call, you're the one that they say, Alvin, you're the next in line CEO.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to those other two people?
That's what I was going to ask you next.
Good.
Yeah, so there certainly are some characteristics and competencies for a CEO But really what you're talking about is it's really all about a variety of things. I mean, this has a lot of legs to it. So your position and your job, your role when you come into these organizations can begin as something that could be perhaps seems to be very simple, but mm-hmm. it's something that is very complex. There are lots of different nodes to it, right? So you've got this whole relationship between the incoming CEO and his or her relationship with the sitting CEO. And then you also have what happens if there are multiple candidates, those who are not chosen. How do you make sure that those people are honored and they feel like they're valued such that they would want to stay and not become what you called one of those transitioning leaders who leave to join another company because we found value in them. We want them to continue to stay with us, et cetera. And so can you talk a little bit about some of that interplay between those relationships?
Well, I think I just did.
Yeah.
And I think that do you want me to address the leader that doesn't get the call?
The leader that doesn't get the call, that relationship.
Okay. When it is done properly, which means that the board, if there is an active board, mm-hmm. and when you're talking about privately held companies, and I work with privately held companies, not to say that I couldn't work with public companies, but I work with privately held companies. And they do have boards. Those boards tend to be internal.
Okay.
Okay. And so I work with that board to have a plan, to have an awareness that their leadership transition is something that they want to pay attention to. And that they want to have a plan and that they want to execute that plan. And a part of that is if there is more than one next in line CEO, and I would say more often than not, there's more than one.
Okay.
More often than not, there's two or three. Hmm. Bigger the company, the more talent
candidates
that they have, the more candidates there might be. There aren't five and six and 10 and 20, but there's two or three.
Mm-hmm.
How the organization goes about the structuring their plan and having conversations with those people that are in line and on that path to the next CEO is critical. It doesn't mean that if you don't get the call that you're not still going to leave because your aspirations are going to be to be a CEO one day. But what it does mean is that you feel honored and that you feel respected and that you feel like you've been given as much chance and as much possibility and as much support as any other person in the organization. In
okay.
privately held companies, you also have to remember that you've got the family factor mm-hmm. that can sometimes play a role. And that brings in the whole complexity of next in line leader, is he or she going to be the next in line leader because their mother or father happens to be the owner of the company or
the founder
of the mm-hmm. company. Thank you. So the relationship of what happens to the person that doesn't get the call is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, you mentioned that there could be perhaps two or three, and typically in large organizations, there are several more than just one. Okay. So now what I'd love to address, especially for our audience out here, is that you're talking about the ones that are identified by the company.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the individuals who think that they're CEO worthy and should have been in a conversation, and they perhaps have not been in the conversation, have not been tapped on the shoulders? Thoughts?
Well, here's what comes up for me when you ask that question, and that is a client that I have. They happen to be in Hawaii. I have happened to have several clients in Hawaii.
That's got to be tough. I don't know how you do it. Somebody's got to do it, right?
That is so tough. And fortunately, they like bringing me out there at the same time, so I don't have to make multiple trips. So the CEO of one of my clients in Hawaii knows that he has about a 10-year path, and I've been with him through his transition. When he took over as CEO,
okay.
I was working with him. And now he is beginning to, because he understands the importance of the transition,
mm-hmm.
he is saying, hey, we've got to develop our next in line leaders. So the two of us built a plan. What are we going to do? What do you want to do, Wes? And he went to the entire company and had an open, transparent meeting that said, we have to plan for our future. I'm not going anywhere tomorrow, but developing future leaders and understanding our leaderships of the future that can maintain our culture and take us into the live us into our vision is important. Mm-hmm. These are three people that I've identified. And he talked about Sally and Sue and Sam, and said that they were a part of this emerging leader group that he was going to conduct internally.
Okay.
One person jumps up out of her seat and says, I want to be a part of that group too. And he had never even thought of her. They meet once a week. We have enough of a structure around what they're doing. And you have to understand the Hawaiian culture is less structured than they are structured.
Okay.
Okay, so when a plan is built, you have to take the organization into consideration.
Absolutely.
Into what they'll tolerate and what's going to be most effective for developing their leaders. Mm-hmm. So this particular client, he meets with his emerging leaders. I meet with them. I am on the phone with them. Sometimes I Skype with them. And this particular person who said, hey, wait a minute, what about me? I want to be a part of this group, is really the shining star.
Really?
Yes. And when I say that, what I'm saying is it is clear that she has had experience that the other three have not had.
Hmm. And that may have gone unnoticed up to that point.
It's not that it didn't go unnoticed, but for whatever reason, and I don't really know why, she was not tapped to be a part of this group.
Interesting.
Now she's an active part of this group. Did that answer your question?
That certainly did, because what's interesting is that you have, you have people on the periphery that have been identified by those who make the decisions. And then you have people that are even farther removed from that, okay, which are saying, you know what, I should be in that group too. So those people are A players perhaps, and they have great talent, and then they'll just leave, and the company doesn't know what happened there. And so I just wondered if there was some conversation when you come in, you kind of look for that next circle of talent as well, or how that works.
I'm always, my eyes and my ears, I mean, part of my role in working with a CEO as their strategic partner, mm-hmm. and their thinking partner, is to have my eyes and my ears open to their organization. Oftentimes, I am in conversation fluidly with people throughout the organization on behalf of, not instead of.
Okay.
A CEO has to have his or her own communications and own level of engagement. But I am often used by a CEO as another set of objective outside safe eyes to go in and to understand, well, what are the people thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the people? So I do get a sense of the level of engagement in an organization. I do get a sense of who is an up-and-comer, who wants to be an up-and-comer, who's not getting what they need, and if they got it, just think what they could be doing.
Right.
So I definitely get that. I definitely get that sense.
Hmm. Interesting. So you obviously have gotten to a professional paradise to even build more on the Hawaiian engagements. So here you are doing something you love and you're being paid for it. So what advice can you offer our listeners that could help them arrive at their true professional passion?
Pay attention to what you're interested in. Alvin, if I were to say one thing that I have done that has served me since the day I started DBH Consulting, and that was 18 years ago,
mm-hmm.
it is I have paid attention to what I was interested in. So that doesn't mean that my very first client, well, let me just say it this way. My very first client I called when I went out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up the phone and I called this individual who knew me and had worked with me, and I said, I'm going out on my own. Throw me a bone. And she said, thanks. She was the chief operating officer of a company in Columbus, Ohio. And she said, Demi, thanks for letting me know. I'll get back with you in a week. And I had my first client. She called me just like she said she would, and I had enough of a client to pay my mortgage. So I had to, when I started my business 18 years ago, it was about client engagements so that I could generate revenue.
Okay.
I also made a commitment very early on that I was going to do two things. One, that I was going to learn as much as, because I was young.
Right.
I was going to learn as much as I possibly could about Demi Hicks.
Okay.
What is it that motivates me? What is it that inspires me? And equally important, what gets in my way? What is it that keeps me from achieving what it is I want to achieve? So I decided I was going to go down that arduous path, and today that's a beautiful path.
Yes.
The second thing that I said to myself in business was, I want to one day, and I wasn't in the beginning. It's taken me several years within these 18 years, okay, to get to the point where I can say that I only am going to work with in areas of interest.
Ah.
And the first real area of interest was promoting people and people and their empowerment. That it moved into leadership because I believed that it was about that empowering people at all levels of an organization was about leadership. So my interest moved there.
Okay.
Then as I engaged more and more in leadership and leadership development, I said, this is all about the CEO and the CEO's leadership and how the CEO chooses to engage an organization, choose to engage that CEO's leadership team, and they engage the organization. And then I became interested in leadership transitions.
Interesting. So I would imagine that at this point in your career, there's probably somewhere in that list is that you only work with the people that you want to work with.
I only work with the people where I know. It's like what you said, Alvin. You want to come on to this radio show, and I bet you do it every single show because of who you are. You want to create magic for your listeners.
Absolutely.
And you're only going to do that when you – I'm not telling you this. I'm just speaking. But you already know this because you do it every day. But that's only going to happen when you are in a right fit situation. And that's the way I like to refer to it. Is that I work with clients where I know within a conversation that it's a right fit. And if it's not a right fit for them, and there are organizations where I'm not a right fit.
Okay.
Or if it's not a right fit for me, for whatever reason, their culture or their leader and the view of that leader or whatever. If it's not a right fit, then I'm not going to take the engagement because it's not going to be good for either of us. So I do subscribe at DBH Consulting and in my practice to right fit engagements.
You know, that's very interesting because you work with primarily entrepreneurs, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so if all your clients are entrepreneurs, and that would be CEOs and top management team, okay, and these entrepreneurs are extremely complex people.
Yes.
They're not one-dimensional, as no one truly is, but they have a lot of other things going on because typically their business, what they're invested in, I mean, they're all in. It's not like you can leave at 5 o'clock and you can just turn it off, right? I mean, they're all in. So when you look at their focus and the kind of their mindset, can you kind of help our listeners through what an entrepreneur's mindset is all about other than just making the dollar? I mean, it's their brand. It's the way they see themselves, perhaps.
I wish it were that easy. and I don't think that you can paintbrush anybody, really. I don't look like you. You don't look like me. We each have our own set of unique abilities.
Yes.
And that's the same with the CEOs that I work with. So each and every CEO that I work with, and when I say entrepreneur, it doesn't necessarily mean that they started their business, but it means that they are entrepreneurial in spirit, mm-hmm. and that they have a passion for their business and for the growth of their business. Well, there are plenty of non-entrepreneurs that could say that same that could state those same attributes.
Right.
The reason that I am intrigued with CEOs in general is because they are complex people.
Okay.
And the CEO has a lot of power, and there are very few people who are willing to sit at the table with a complex personality and have a conversation with them that's real.
Is it because of the overpowering effect, or what is it that makes people less willing to sit down with those folks?
I think that the hierarchy creates
okay.
is there.
Okay.
Okay. The hierarchy is there. Mm-hmm. A CEO believes that it is their responsibility. It's a hard job. I want to tell you, being a CEO is sometimes people think, oh, gosh, they're the CEO. They've got everything they want. They can get anything they need. They've got all the resources. It is not an easy job. It is their job to stand firm, to stand steady. You know, Bill George wrote a book called Authentic Leadership. It's a good read for any leader, really, but emerging leaders might want to pick it up.
Okay.
Authentic Leadership. And one of the things I've learned in my practice, especially working with baby boomer CEOs or older, is that it is really hard for them to feel like they can just sit down and be who they are. They can't sit down and tell their employees, you know, I'm scared as the Dickens that we're not going to make it next year, or that our growth is. It's so hard for them to decide and to navigate how to be authentic, what authentic means, where do I draw the boundaries of what I can, what's the difference between what one of my mentors, Sonia Nevis, who's a PhD, she's a world-renowned psychologist and does a lot with organizations across the world. Mm-hmm. One of the things she has coined is intimate and strategic systems for leaders. And when you're working that way, when is it that I can be intimate, meaning kind of palsy, rub you against the shoulders, let you know that I care about you, but when do I need to be strategic so that you know that I am the leader and that there is a boundary there, and that we have to keep working towards the objectives and the goals of this organization.
Yeah, and that's sometimes, I would imagine, a very difficult balance to strike.
It is a very difficult balance. It's a balance that I continue to pay attention to in my practice as I'm working with my clients. It is an incredible incredibly important concept for leaders of at all levels, not just CEOs, to take and to understand the difference between and how to balance and use intimate and strategic systems effectively. It makes a difference day one.
Intimate and strategic systems. So we're talking with Demi Hicks, the president of DBH Consulting. Demi is a strategic consultant, an executive coach, a facilitator, and a fantastic speaker. So her role is to facilitate, plan, and execute strategic initiatives that are necessary for achieving the desired results, the results of the clients that bring her on board. And so we had a conversation in the green room earlier, and sometimes I wish I could bottle some of those questions. They're probably some of my best questions, Demi, that go unheard. But one of them I do want to bring in to our conversation today, because certainly you mentioned entrepreneurs, and certainly that's what you work with. Of course, in our program at Kennesaw State University, the Executive MBA program, we talk with folks who are entrepreneurs, and they work in not-for-profits and certainly corporations. And they're mid-level professionals, and sometimes they're in the C-suite, and they're wanting to really get more of an education. Mm-hmm. They want to change their paradigms and their thought processes. But we have fewer entrepreneurs than we do of the other group. Mm-hmm. And so we have more intrapreneurs than entrepreneurs. So those people who are supposed to be bringing change and energy mm-hmm. into the process. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about, if you will, what you do when you're working with your clients and how to assess the energy that a person brings as at the CEO position and what perhaps the candidates that are looking at being the next CEO would bring in terms of energy. Kind of talk about your thoughts around that.
Sure. One of my favorite topics, and you know that because we brought it up in the green room. But first, Alvin, I want a point of clarification. And that is that where I work with entrepreneurs, I also work with nonprofits, and I work with organizations that are other than entrepreneurial-driven firms. I have a very strong history in working with entrepreneurs, and that's not all that.
That's not the only group that I work with. Fantastic.
Right.
So those of you listening to this broadcast, know that you can call Demi regardless if you're an entrepreneur or not.
That's exactly right. Energy. Sonia Nevis says energy is that power is energy in action. Mm-hmm. So let me just say that again, because some of us have an idea that you know, different all kinds of different ideas about power, power over others, hierarchical power, all kinds of power. Mm-hmm. She says that power is energy in action. So if you just write that down and reflect on it, mm-hmm. and think about the word energy in action, an organization is all about moving towards a set, hopefully moving towards an aligned set of objectives, goals, and actions that are going to help you achieve those goals, right?
Right.
So the energy of an organization is all about the people. Mm-hmm. It's about the people and their investment and in the company. It's about, and I don't mean their financial investment, although that can be inspirational,
right,
and that can be motivational. But energy is about how a leader motivates his or her leadership team, managerial team. It has to infiltrate all the way through each and every individual in the organization so that their energy is mobilized. If energy, the opposite of energy being mobilized is what?
Immobilization.
Or?
Static.
Stuck. Right. So if you're a leader out there or a department manager or wherever you are in your organization, look at your company. Is your company moving? And is it moving in an aligned fashion where most of the people are moving in the same direction and things are getting done? And there's a degree of satisfaction on the faces of the individuals, and they're saying, yes, we're doing this. Look at how it's not just about growing. You can't grow unless you're taking the actions, the initiatives and the actions to grow.
Exactly.
And it's energy that people bring to the equation to make that happen. Sometimes what I see in an organization and an organization that has a transition of leadership going on that is not well prepared, planned for, and cared for, mm-hmm. can sometimes have this happen. And energy an organization gets stuck. Energy begins to stop moving. Why? Because people are uncertain. They're curious. They're uncertain about the future. They don't know what's going on. And so energy stops moving forward.
Yeah.
So one of the tips I would offer to our listeners, Alvin, is to raise your awareness if it's not already there. And I'm sure many of you could sit here with Alvin and have this conversation with him about energy. But I'm the lucky one. But raise your awareness around the energy of your people. Just walk around. Walk around and pay attention to the way people are getting things done. Mm-hmm. How are things getting done around your strategic plan? Mm-hmm. If you don't have a strategic plan, you need a strategic plan.
Right.
That has initiatives and that has actions and that has ownership to each one of those actions and that has accountability to each one of those actions and that people are invigorated about, walk around. Ask yourself the question, do I see the energy moving? Is it fragmented? Meaning, are people kind of going all over the place or are they just sitting like floods, duds? Or is there vitality in my organization? The organization with vitality in an aligned fashion moving towards the same vision is exactly where I'd want to be as an employee.
And you can accomplish any goal.
Any goal.
And so you've taken it at the organizational level, and certainly that is obviously what the CEOs would be looking for their employees to do. However, to make it even more internalized for the employee, they need to have a strategic plan personally, wouldn't you think?
I think you're right on. And I think that that's where so many people, at least I know in the Atlanta area, offer coaching has become such a big field. And I think there are a lot of misnomers about who's a good coach, who's not a good coach. I know a lot of good ones that offer developmental plans and coaching plans for anybody at any level of the organization. And I encourage CEOs, leaders of organization, department managers, anybody who has the authority and responsibility over development budget, even in these times when things have been tighter, although I'm hearing a lot more from my clients and I'm seeing a lot more of an understanding of we have got to invest in our employees, not just at the top, but at all levels of the organization.
Interesting. So we talked about the process of leadership transition, and certainly that process is what you're well aware of and what they bring you in for. So what is the antithesis of that? What's the impact of ignoring the process of a leadership transition?
I was hoping you were going to ask me that question. There are many ramifications to ignoring that transition. One is just dissatisfaction amongst your people at the highest levels. I have a client right now who is in the midst of a leadership transition, and it is taking somebody who is not in the C-suite and bringing them into a C-suite that has existed for more than 20 years. Can you get the change there?
Yeah.
So here you've got this comfort zone. You got the CEO and the COO total comfort zone. And now here's this new person with lots of energy, lots of vision. Guess what? They do it different than the current CEO. So by not being willing, and they are willing because I'm there.
Right.
And it's moving very slowly. It's little baby step at a time. But by not being willing to address the leadership transition, you are ultimately not dealing with the core feelings of your organization.
Wow.
The core feelings of the organization as a whole. You're also not properly preparing that next-in-line leader. You're not giving them the support. I see this happen time and time again. The next-in-line CEO can't walk in the room and say, I need help. The next-in-line they can, but they're not likely to. The next-in-line CEO can't come in and say, I don't know how to do that. This isn't my strong suit. Would you expect that would happen?
No, they cannot appear vulnerable.
That's right. The next in line CEO has to come in and almost make it sound like they've been doing the job for 10 years
That's
or
right.
5 years and that they're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? This is a new role.
Yeah.
So ultimately, the ramifications for not paying attention to a leadership transition are, in fact, the benefits, which are a smooth transition, which ensures that your company continues to move forward, stay mobilized, and reach its goals.
And some of the peripheral effects of that, positive effects, I would imagine, are the fact that everyone else in the organization is watching the fact that our company now is taking a bold step, bringing in the best, DBH Consulting, to talk with us about how to move forward. So now somebody's paying attention there.
They all are, and generally, at least at the shareholder board level and shareholder level, mm-hmm. I know all of those people. I have relationships with them. I have conversations with them. So they view me as a part of the team, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm still an outsider,
right?
But I'm a part of the team. And just because I'm an outsider and I am objective and I'm not pushing anybody's agenda, they have some sense of safety and stability that even though this might take some time to work through, we're going to get there.
Interesting. So based on the conversation we've had thus far, I've picked up a question that I'd love to ask you. And I don't know if I'm right about this, but it appears as though some of your clients know each other and that you bring them together and that mm-hmm. there's some type of shared discussion where their knowledge can move between mm-hmm. organizations. Would you talk a little bit about that? Maybe I missed it.
No,
maybe
you did not. You did not miss it, and I appreciate you bringing that up because yeah. I've thought about it and I haven't brought it up. Let's go back to emerging leaders mm-hmm. and the development of emerging leaders. One of the initiatives that DBH undertook a couple of years ago was what we call emerging leader groups. We have two of them. One's called CEO Track.
Okay.
So it's just for leaders who are our next in line leaders who will be becoming a CEO okay. in their organization. And then the other one is for high potential emerging leaders.
Okay.
These people come together. So it's two groups, 6 to 8 people in each group. And what I have done is I have gone out into industry, strong leaders that I know that have strong organizations. They are the epitome of leadership practice, leadership discipline, mm-hmm. empowerment of their people, growing their organization. And I have asked them to join me as the CEO role model and co-facilitator of these emerging leader groups.
Interesting.
And we have, one of them I have going on right now has 6 people in it. They all happen to be young men. Mm-hmm. And they will all be stepping into the CEO role anywhere from a year to the next 6 years.
Hmm.
And we met in person, spent a day bonding, dinner and a day bonding, forming ourselves as a group. And now we meet monthly, telephonically, because let's face it, cost and time doesn't allow people to get together as much as we might like to for development.
Absolutely.
And if it's about development, if it's about training, you can walk into a classroom or you can walk into a session and you're going to get something out of that session, but that's different than development.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about developing a leader's personhood and their characteristics and competencies as a leader. So it's the drip approach.
Okay.
That's the approach that I take to development. Drip, drip, drip over a long period of time. And we meet monthly, telephonically, and to use your words, Alvin, magic is made. These young leaders appreciate the support of the group.
Mm-hmm.
They appreciate the connection with their peers. They appreciate having the authenticity and the experience of the CEO mentor that has joined me, and it's very effective.
Well, in our program at Kennesaw State University, we have a saying, you learn from us, we learn from you, and then you learn from each other. So it sounds as though you're doing exactly the same thing.
We are.
So with that in mind, I really want to switch gears just a bit from what you do mm-hmm. to who you are.
Mm.
Because the person that sits across from me looks incredibly vital, very effervescent, lots of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to know, so how does Demi stay so sharp, so focused, so grounded?
Mm. I don't know if anybody's ever asked me that question, but I would say yes, that I'm very aware of the way that you just described me and the accuracy of how you just described me. And I would say that I pay attention to the way I feel and that I have both an emotional life and I have a cognitive life, and I like to keep them both stimulated, that quality of life is important to me, and What that means is that professionally I'm doing something that matters. You know, I love what it is you say on your tagline, and I just love that, Alvin, and that I'm doing something that matters and that I can have an impact. If I stop having an impact, then my vitality is going to go down.
Okay.
My personal life is first and foremost. My spiritual life is first and foremost. Without my spiritual life, I have nothing. It feeds me, and that takes the shape and the form of many different things, mm-hmm. and everybody has their own way to put that together for themselves.
Because we are complex people.
We are complex people, so I have my way, and I think, Alvin, that I am vital because I'm so intrigued with resilience, and I am intrigued by the resilience of the human spirit.
Hmm. Interesting. So with regard to that, I know that you've given us lots of nice tips and things to think about with regard to the leaders that are listening to our program today, and certainly in the future as they move along. But when you think through the advice that you would have for a person to really focus on, I mean, there's a couple of different cycles in a person's life, right? Those people who are just leaving college in that college area and thinking about what they want to do. Mm-hmm. Then those people are kind of in the mid-range, which is where we see a lot of those people in our program. They're saying, hey, you know, I really like this path, and I really want to zero in on this and get a little bit wider understanding, a CEO's view of business, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And then we have those people who are saying, you know, I don't know all that I should know, so I want to come to you to get more education, not training. And we're glad that you are switching and helping us to change our paradigms and see the world in a larger view. Mm-hmm. So what books do you read? How do you see the world, and how do you keep that piece of it, of yourself, so energized and saying, okay, I can help these different people? Mm-hmm. And the reason why I ask that is because you're dealing with a different group. I mean, they're not all the same.
Right.
So you've got to be able to relate to them. They've got to be able to relate to you. Mm-hmm. And so you're learning something different every time you get with those people.
So what do I read? First of all, let me tell you my method of reading.
Okay.
I'm so interested in everything. So something will catch my attention, and I'm going to pick it up, and I'm going to look at it. And I don't have to give it a lot of time, but I can get just enough to say, that was cool, and you know, then put it down and go on to the next thing. So I try to stay really broad, and the only way that I can stay broad is to allow myself the permission to say, pick it up, take a sentence or a paragraph or the chapter or whatever, and then put it back down. I do have a reading list, and I think it's important for all people, really, if you want to continue to expand yourself, and that's what my life is about. My life is about wanting to continue to expand and have a strong, powerful quality of life. And if I want to expand, then I have to give myself experiences. And experiences mean being here with you today. Mm-hmm. I mean, shoot, I was scared, Alvin. You know, you're a big presence. And you represent an incredible university with an incredible program. And so, but I wasn't going to miss it because I wanted the experience. And I knew that if I'd allow myself to do it, that I would expand. I do have a reading list. I try to look at both sides of the picture. Mm-hmm. So my reading list includes things like both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. I look at the Huffington Post. I look at the Daily Beast. So you can already get a flavor of,
yes,
of what area I go down. But I also like to pick up books that my mentors have written.
Okay.
And if I could say something that has been very important to my path of self-discovery and my path of growth as an individual and as a professional, it has been finding mentors who have done things that matter.
Okay.
And going to them and not being afraid to pick up the phone and say, will you have a conversation with me? Will you meet with me? And what I find is these people who have done world-renowned things and impacted millions and, you know, or not millions, that's grandiose, but...
No, that's our audience.
Okay. yeah, that's your audience. That's right. You've got the million
We've
listeners.
We've got the millions.
But they are so humble, and they're so full of humility, and the reason that they are who they are is because they want to help anybody who comes to their door and says, will you have a conversation with me? And so I have done that for the last 18 years of my life. I have gone to people that are doing things that I want to do.
So you found those that you wanted to model.
Yes.
And then you stepped forward and you said, hey, you know what? Would you please? And they said, absolutely.
That's right.
We wish more people would ask us.
Yes.
But since you did, we have more time for you.
Yes.
Impressive.
Yes.
So as you look back today, what do you wish someone had told you before you started DBH Consulting?
I wish someone had, I don't know that there's anything that someone could have told me, but let me tell you what I appreciate what someone did tell me.
Okay.
And it was my brother. It was my little brother. And he's 6 years younger, so he's not so little. And he's a successful businessman. But 18 years ago, he was young and just starting in his career, mm-hmm. working for Accenture. And I went to him and said, this is what I'm doing. What do you think? And he said, Demi, you've got everything you need. Go for it.
Interesting.
And it was the belief of somebody that I loved mm-hmm. and trusted and knew was successful himself, but it was my brother, and that meant something. It's interesting that it wasn't a big brother, that it was a little brother, but I think what's been more important to me, Alvin, is what people have said to me, not what I wish they had said, mm-hmm. but it's been what they have said, because I listen carefully. And anybody sitting around me, no matter who they are, no matter how old they are, there is something for me to learn. And I listen. I'm an active listener. And I learned from experience. And that's what I've done.
And we appreciate that. So now my final question for you, because, sitting across from you, we could probably sit and talk all day, no doubt about it. But I know you're a very busy woman. So now my final question is, and actually your answer to this question will be posted on our blog. So which business book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Well, I have more than one. But the business book that has impacted me the most, and I actually designed my model of strategic planning around it, is Transformational Leadership, Intentional Revolutions, Seven Strategies to Transforming an Organization by Edwin C. Nevis, Ph.D., the late Edwin C. Nevis. You can still get it on Amazon.com. Every CEO ought to have it. It can be a little bit academic. It is a great read.
Okay. So on behalf of our learning community, it's certainly been an honor and a pleasure and a lot of fun to have you join us today to share your thoughts and your expertise and certainly your passion. So I'd love to have you back on the show sometimes if we can work it out schedule-wise. Is that a deal?
Absolutely. I'll be here.
Well, fantastic. With that in mind, could you tell us how our learning community can contact you by email or by phone? And by phone, perhaps.
I think the best way to contact me would be by phone.
Okay.
And that's area code 404-541-6600-6600, and I'm extension 2.
Yeah, very good. So with that response, we'll bring this edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. We invite you to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. And also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu. if you have recommendations for guests, because I've enjoyed hearing your thoughts, and also we've had a couple of those guests on based on your recommendations. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.